Well, this week we're talking about Old Testament faith. And as I think Rob and Ernie both have said, you can learn there's a beautiful picture of God in the Old Testament. People sometimes struggle with that. Sometimes they kind of want to say, well, we're not sure about some of these things. We want to get rid of some of these things where we're not sure how to deal with it. But really, when you read it in whole, there's a beautiful picture. So Paul uses that. And then we're going to read today where Paul really is reinforcing what he's trying to tell the Galatian church by using a source that they all can agree on. If you want to create agreement with somebody, do you start talking about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Depends who you're talking to, doesn't it? If we start talking about Donald Trump, to my father-in-law, he would join right in. We'd have a real connection. You start talking about Hillary Clinton to my daughter, she would join right in and we'd have a great connection. So Paul is really trying to appeal to this church to recognize the truth about God. And I think that's what we have to keep reminding ourselves. Sometimes we want to point out people's errors, but we don't want to join in somebody they understand. Ernie talks about his sales training. You know, you don't go in and say, oh, you need this. You go in and say, hey, I need you to know something. And you go join their world and help them to see they need it. We're always more convinced of our own beliefs and our own conclusions than we are of others. That's so true working with children. You know, parents will say, I tell my kids every time this. The key is they haven't come to that conclusion themselves. And too often parents get in the way of helping the kids to come to their own conclusions and to challenge their own conclusions. They try to put their conclusion on it. And why do we do that? We're right. We know the truth. We know what it should be. Let me tell you.
Well, you understand the conclusion better, seems like.
You understand it because it makes sense to you. Yeah. That's a key point. It makes sense to you. We understand it. But what happens is, when we try to put that conclusion on others, it drives a wedge. And then we don't have a connection. So Paul is masterfully using the Old Testament to help this Galatians church. And it's not only, he's not using the Old Testament, he's tying them together. And we're going to look at that today. Galatians chapter 3, verse 1. Oh, foolish Galatians. Don't you like how he starts? Oh, foolish Galatians. Doesn't that get your attention? They have to have it. He has to believe in that relationship he has to be able to say that. Some client come to me, and the first time I say, oh, foolish so-and-so, what's going to happen to them? They're going to come back and see you, Rob? Probably not. Hardly.
But especially if you look what that word really says, it says idiots.
Idiots, okay. Oh, idiots. Oh, idiots, Galatians. And then you go back to idiot. What is being stupid and what is being ignorant? Stupid means you know better and have the ability to it. I think that'd be considered the same as idiot, wouldn't it? And then ignorant means you just don't know. It means you may not have even the capacity to know. But idiot, oh idiot Galatians, who has bewitched you? Who has bewitched you? That's a pretty powerful statement. It was before your eyes that Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. You witnessed this. You saw this. Let me ask you only this. Did you receive the Spirit by works of the law or by hearing with faith? Are you so foolish? Having begun by the Spirit, are you now being perfected by the flesh? Those 3-4 chapters have so much packed in there. What do you think is saving you? What's perfecting you? Did you somehow come into this knowledge and then suddenly think, well, now it's my behavior that's going to count? And that goes back to that lifelong question. Well, what does behavior have to do with our beliefs? What does all of that, how does that make a connection? How would you answer that? That was one of the topics on the lesson. It talked about, does it mean that we can do whatever we want?
Well, it's in my, it's always been a question of what does my behavior have to do with my salvation?
Mm-hmm.
More so than. I have that question sometimes, you know.
How do you answer?
I struggle. I mean, there's times where I go, well, you know, where I look for guidance, and then I realize, you know what, this is crazy to start going around in circles. Even today, I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's ingrained, you know, when we talk so early.
Go ahead. You're in the...
I was going to say that beliefs should drive the behavior.
Okay, beliefs should drive the behavior. Okay.
Actually, beliefs do drive the behavior.
Okay. I think that's the accurate statement. Beliefs do drive behavior. Do you have any problem with that? Sometimes your behavior, I think your behavior is a reflection of your beliefs.
But sometimes what you do causes you to change your belief about you because you don't want to be shown up.
So then the belief is, I've got to make sure I'm not shown up.
Well, I do this, so I've got to say I believe this.
Okay, so it's, I got to try to appear congruent. Then the behavior, then the belief is, I want to make sure I look like I'm okay. And that's an interesting point. Sometimes we do things over and over, and then it becomes repetition, we start believing it. Sometimes we do things over and over, and we think that is all we have to do. That's the danger of being here every Sabbath. It can be, okay, well, I've done my thing. You know, I've gone to church. I'm okay now. When the key of that is, it's not about whether you come to church or not come, it's what's happening to you. And what is the reward? So is it He giving us a reward, or because we are so appreciative, because we recognize what we have?
Well, the more you come into conformity to God, the more you're able to appreciate what heaven is and what it's all about. You may be saved, but you may not understand what you've got until you've been there 1,000 years.
I think there's so many things we don't understand. I think we have clues, but to think we could understand as a finite mind infinite, and the reality is I don't think we will ever, because that means we're then infinite. And that's the key, is we have to be open to the reality of understanding that we don't understand at all. Let's keep reading, see what he says here. Do you suffer so many things in vain, if indeed it was in vain? Does he who supplies the Spirit to you and work miracles among you do so by works of the law or by hearing with faith? Just as Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteous. Now that occurred after he took. He was counted righteous after he took his son and was about to kill him, right? No? Well, that's when he proved to God that he loved him, right?
He proved when he went out to his country and he didn't know where he was going and didn't know what was happening.
See, we forget the progression of things. And it's so easy to come and get confused, as Rick was talking about. And that's, and let's, while we're here, let's go look at Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Now, the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in all, and in you and all the families of the earth shall be blessed. That was a promise. That was a covenant. Kevin talked about covenants this morning, and what did that covenant do for Abraham? He believed it, but what about his behavior?
He departed.
He believed and he left. He took action. But like all of us, we're still in that process of understanding what it means to believe in God. So it's interesting to think about Abraham and how Paul is trying to show that Abraham had a promise given to him. Next chapter. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarah's wife and Lot his brother and all their possessions gathered. So this was a decision he made. I'm going to trust God. I'm going to believe him. I'm going. Have you ever had those kind of moments in your life? You just make a decision and it's a pivotal decision. And all kinds of things start changing in your life. And that's interesting to look at, how all of those things evolve. How all those things come about. So that's what part of what Paul was using there when he talked about Abraham. Going back to Galatians. Know then that it is those of faith who are the sons of Abraham. And the Scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, in you shall all the nations be blessed. So then those who are of faith are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith. He was really helping the Galatians church to realize this is the promise made to Abraham. And it includes everyone. It includes all who respond to God through faith. And that's the key, is when we read that. Do you realize at times how much faith it takes to really make some behavioral changes? Because you think about it, you kind of have to let go. No one comes to me and says, things are working so great, I just want to get things working a little better. No, it's not working. So Paul is trying to help these Galatian church to realize these are all among us. There's no reason not to sit at the table with them. There's no reason not to associate. It's not about who's circumcised, who's not. Do we see that Abraham was circumcised at this point? No. Do we see God said to him, okay, now that you've made this covenant, we need this sign. Who are the signs for? Are the signs for God? The signs are for us. They're for us to remind ourselves. We go back to Genesis here, chapter 15. So Abraham had moved his family. He had had several experiences delivering Lot from Sodom and Gomorrah. And here in chapter 15, verse 1. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in vision. Fear not, Abram. I am your shield. Your reward shall be great. But Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me? For I continue childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, behold, you have given me no offspring, and a member of my household will be my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. This man shall not be your heir. Your own son shall be your heir. And he brought him outside, said, look toward heaven and number the stars, if you are able to number them. Then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. And he believed the Lord, and he counted him as righteous. Who counted him as righteous? God did. He counted him as righteous. And Abraham lived a perfect life after that, right? That's the thing we struggle to remind ourselves. What does it mean to be declared righteous? He was seen as perfect in the eyes of God. But that doesn't mean Abraham wasn't done with life struggles. You know, let's just go down the story here, you know. Abraham then struggled to believe God that he was going to produce things. So he thought he needed to do it. So he took the handmaiden and had a son with her. You can just see these things. So Paul is trying to emphasize, hey, we've lost the boat here, Galatian church. We have forgotten some basic things. Abraham was declared righteous, and then he had a lot of challenges to learn and understand what that meant. And the culminating act when he took his son Isaac and took him and thought he was going to sacrifice him was really the opportunity to see the mind of God. It wasn't a test for Abraham. It was a revelation to Abraham. Look at where we've come to. Look at how much you trust me. And Abraham in those 3-day journey, don't you think he recounted some of those experiences? Don't you think he thought about those moments and realized, God made that promise. He's been faithful in everything. I can trust God. I can trust him. You know, I think that story's been really distorted to about a behavioral test versus an understanding of where Abraham had come in his own life. Because I that's quite a challenge. But it was really an opportunity for Abraham to recognize and understand where he's come in his life and where he is in his relationship to God. You know, oftentimes when you're involved with people and their struggles at times, you often have to figure out how can I be a comfort to them, but also stimulate them to think. I had this woman in my office that I've seen for a little while, and she's probably in her late 40s, but I'm not sure she's going to live very long because she's got all kinds of health issues. And I was saying to her, you know, she was talking about this growth here and this problem here, and I said to her, well, what do you believe about God? I know we've talked about God before. Well, I know I'm saved, she said. I know I'm saved. And we start talking for a few minutes later, she says, but I'm afraid I'm not. What a contrast. I know I'm saved, but I'm afraid I'm not. We all have that. We all have that anxiety. But Abraham had the opportunity to recognize how far he's come. That's always where it's important that we realize where we come. How do we understand? I think to me that's the greatest thing about getting older is it's like you have a wealth of understanding of how God has led you to where you're at. You have a wealth of things to realize, wow, look at where I am now in life. Look at what opportunities I have. And to me, that's an exciting thing. So Paul continues, and now he's used Abraham and helped the people realize. Because this is a real challenge. And think about our own church, some of the challenges we have. I mentioned a long time ago when I did one of the Sabbath school classes, why don't we have a stand outside and say, please put cigarettes here? What are we saying by not having that? Oh, if you don't smoke, you can't come here. Someone said, well, we don't need it. Who knows? Sometimes we get so accustomed to our little world that we get in and our own little bubble, we don't recognize how maybe we are maybe doing the same thing as the Galatian church. Maybe there's little subtle ways we're not inviting everyone in. Because there's a kind of a stigma or we don't. It was the most fascinating thing in my own life experience of growing up that my father, when we moved to Texas, kind of reverted back to some of the behaviors of drinking and smoking that he had not done for 25 years or years. And then he was diagnosed. And what's interesting is, before all that, he was having trouble looking for a job. And he found a job in Atlanta. We had moved here about a year or so. And then he didn't take the job because they'd asked him to work on Sabbath. Isn't that ironic?
Well, it's two Sabbaths a year.
Two Sabbaths a year he had to work. But he didn't want to do that. And you know, I'm just fascinated in the belief and the experience. You know, a few months later, he then got diagnosed with a brain tumor and died after a few years. But, you know, it's interesting to look at the process and how things become part of us. So Paul says here, for all who rely on the works of law are under curse, for it is written, cursed be everyone who does not abide by all things written in the book of law and do them. Now it is evident that no one is justified before God by the law, for the righteous shall live by faith. The righteous shall live by faith. Martin Luther, that reverberated in his head, the righteous shall live by faith. But the law is not of faith, rather, the one who does them shall live by them. Christ redeemed us from the curse of law by becoming a curse for us, for it is written, cursed is everyone who is hanged on a tree. That was the most despicable way to die. So that in Christ Jesus the blessing of Abraham might come to the Gentiles, so that we might receive the promise Spirit through faith. To give human example bothers. To give human example, brothers, even with a man-made covenant, no one annuls it or adds to it once it has been ratified. Now the promises were made to Abraham and to his offspring. It did not say, and to offsprings, referring to many, but referring to one. And to your offspring, who is Christ. This is what I mean, the law, which came 430 years afterwards, does not annul a covenant previously. For if the inheritance comes by the law, it is no longer comes by a promise. But God gave it to Abraham by a promise. He gave it as a promise. And then he goes on in talking about law. You know, I think sometimes when we have questions about faith, behavior, law, those kinds of things sometimes means we're out of the experience that we're just kind of making a theoretical discussion. I want Carol to read some stories. And this is from the big book. Alcoholic Anonymous book. And it's interesting to look at the reality. I have a client that recently went through a program and was in AA, and I've known about AA and all that and think it's a great thing. But I suddenly realized the other day, I've never read the big book. How could I sit and talk to these people that are talking about AA and not know, have any reference point? I started reading this and it sounded like living examples of what Paul's talking about. So I want her to read so you can hear a few examples.
Trembling, I stepped from the hospital a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink. And on our Armistice Day, 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected that there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through that night and the next day. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it for daylight. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course, he would have dinner, and that then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. The door opened and he stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? I pushed a drink across the table, and he refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had gotten into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Come, what's all this about? I queried. He looked straight at me. Simply but smilingly, he said, I've got religion. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer was an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right. But bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my Jim would last longer than his preaching. But he did no ranting. In a matter of fact, he told how two men had appeared in court, persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It had worked. He had come to pass his experience along to me. It reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a different soil. Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges of my old prejudice. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. I didn't like the idea. I could go for such conception as creative intelligence, universal mind, or spirit of nature, but I resisted the thought of the czar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Thus I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humbling willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those of myself. And so it had been ever since, how blind I had been. At the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. There I humbly offered myself to God, as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. I admitted that for the first time, that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away, root and branch. I have not had a drink since. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when doubt, only asking for direction and strength in my own problems as he would have in me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request or on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive. But that would be in great measure. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential elements. They were requirements. Simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light, who presides over us all. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense of victory, followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. there was utter confidence. I felt lifted up, as though the great clean wind of a mountain top blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. For a moment I was alarmed and called my friend, the doctor, to ask if I were still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. Finally, he shook his head, saying, "Something has happened to you I don't understand. But you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were." The good doctor now sees many men who have had such experiences. He knows that they are real. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. Perhaps I could be of some help to them. They, in turn, might work with others. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly, it was imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said.
I want to stop right there. Faith without works is dead. Now, if somebody put that in a quarterly, we'd all jump on that. But let's hear why he says that. Go ahead.
And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I have gone to my hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. We commenced to make fast friends, and a fellowship has grown among us, of which is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet on the path that really goes somewhere, have seen the most impossible domestic situations righted, feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. I have seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Business and professional men have regained their standing. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. In one Western city and its environs, there are 1,000 of us and our families. We meet frequently so that the newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. At these informal gatherings, one may often see from 50 to 200 persons. We are growing in numbers and power. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some will be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity. But just underneath, there is a deadly earnestness. Faith has work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need to look no further for utopia. We have it with us right now and here and now. Every day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace, honor, and goodwill to men.
That's the founder of AA and his story. And there's a lot of stuff I read prior to that. But to me, that's what Paul is talking about. That life-moving experience where we turn over and say, okay, I believe. And then something happens. And as he said in there, there's an addendum added to that, that his spiritual experience sometimes come like his, and sometimes they come gradually. I haven't had that kind of experience. I've had it a gradual experience. But the same thing is occurring where you recognize, whom do I trust? Do I trust in my own ability to create a tower of Babel so that the flood won't get me? Or do I trust in God who made a covenant, who made a promise? Can God be trusted? That was the question at the beginning. That continues to be the question. And as Kevin said, there's a spirit that's trying to discredit God at every point. You can't trust God. You can't do that. Oh, you can figure this out. You can do that. Sure, we have intelligence. We have abilities. God has created a wonderful intelligence within us that we need to utilize. But ultimately, it's that covenant we have with God and that trust we have in Him. Faith has to work 24 hours a day, he said, or we perish. That's true about all of us. That's what has to be realized in our life. Sometime we can get real kind of boxed into certain things and think, okay, I went to church, I did this, I did that, okay, now I'm okay, instead of it's a working every day. And to me, when I read that story and his life and some of those experiences, it's a recognition that every day it's that thing. Faith without works is dead with them, because if you don't start the works, you don't continue the spiritual development, and then you go back to where you were. You want to be in a better place in your life, go help someone else, and something will happen to you. To me, that's the living experience that doesn't question about faith and works and law. It's not about what day you worship. It's about what you do with your body. It's about how do you trust in God, and then what do you do as a result of that every day of your life. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful that we can come together and study Paul's words. And here as he refers to Abraham and Abraham's trusting you. And we know Abraham had many struggles after that, just like each one of us. But may we in our journey come to the place that Abraham did with Isaac, where he recognized that you could be trusted and that if you asked him to do it, he could trust you. Bless each one of us in our own journey, wherever that may lead us, wherever we are, and help us each to remember how much you love us. In your holy name, amen.